to deal with this night. I tell Branley I need to sit a song out, that if I keep moving I might lose the chicken cordon bleu I paid $30 for all over her dress. It's a threat to her perfection, so she allows me to go. I'm sitting at our table, fishing in my jacket pocket for the flask, when I see the hole in the brightness, a spot of darkness that stands out among the chaos. Alex is weaving through the crowd in a brown dress that probably looked like a bag on the hanger, but looks better than sex on her. It covers everything it should, but hugs close, giving you an outline of what's underneath that is way hotter than just going ahead and showing it. Branley looks fantastic, no doubt. She looks like the perfect teenage prom date, a little kid playing dress-up. Alex looks like a woman, like an adult who has already seen it all and doesn't need to prove shit. She heads for a table on the far side, where I see Sarah and her date in matching dresses. Branley's watching me over the shoulder of her dance partner, eyes slit like a cat ready to pounce. I grab my punch glass and tip the flask into it under the table, almost dumping half the drink when PK flops into the chair next to me. "Hey, asshole, dance with me," she says. It's not the most flattering invitation I've ever had, but I know Park brought his own flask, and it looks like PK got in on that action early. She drags me onto the floor so hard I'm tripping to avoid stepping on the back of her dress, which drags even though she has on heels. Even with the shoes, her face just hits my chest, so I'm looking down into her fairly flushed cheeks as we start to dance. "You see Alex?" she asks. "Yeah. She looks good, right?" There's no harm in my admitting that, so I nod, trying to steer us away from Branley so she can't overhear our conversation. "So what's up with that?" PK pushes on.
"What do you mean?"
PK rolls her eyes, and suddenly one very pointy, nicely painted fingernail is digging into my chest. "You listen to me, Jack effing Fisher," she says. "Branley's run-of-the-mill. She's a golden retriever. You got me? Alex is an Irish wolfhound." The nail pushes in a little farther. "An Irish wolfhound," she repeats, red-rimmed eyes daring me to contradict her. "And you can't just walk away from that." She's so mad at me, I don't know if I'm going to get the chance to explain that I just came to that realization, or something like it that didn't include dog breeds, a few minutes ago. I pick her up by her elbows and lift her so that we're face to face, which at least gets the digging nail out from my skin. She's so surprised, she stops talking. "I know," I say, and the depths of how well I know it must show, because PK suddenly smiles, transforming her whole face. I put her back down, and she barrel hugs me, little arms stronger than I expected. "If Branley is a golden retriever and Alex is an Irish wolfhound, then you're a pissed-off cocker spaniel," I say. "With rabies," she adds, "and don't you forget it." She bares her teeth at me and disappears into the crowd. I'm at the edge of the dance floor, Alex's table only a few feet away, the doubts of the past few months reduced to nothing. My mind is trying to piece together an argument against it, but my heart knows what it wants, and my feet are already moving in her direction. It's not a decision so much as instinct, and I'm beside her, my hands on hers as I say her name. She looks at me, her eyes even bigger with a dash of eyeliner around them. "Can we talk?" I ask. She nods, takes my hand, and leads me out of the room, out to the balcony where the fresh air and Alex beside me is the most sobering thing I've ever experienced. I don't want to say stupid things. I don't want to tell her she looks nice or say I didn't expect to see her. I only want to talk about the things that matter. The things that have been rolling around in my brain for months, knocking into all the normal things I'm trying to concentrate on and throwing them off course. But the only thing that comes out is the truth, simple and impossible at the same time. "I want you," I say. Her face lights up, the lingering shadows I've noticed from afar for the past few months thrown aside as she smiles, her expression the only answer I need. And somehow that was the most important part. Now that it's been said, I feel like everything else, no matter how horrible, is manageable. You're sure? She says, her eyes searching my face. I need to ask you some things first, I say. Are you coming to the lodge after? Claire and Park are, but I don't think I'm invited. I'm inviting you. She raises an eyebrow. Is that okay? There'll be so many people there, no one will know either way. We can't talk here. Brandley will be on me any second, and she might throw her drink in your face. Alex shrugs. Then I'll kill her. I almost laugh, but the sound gets stuck in my throat. Alex watches me for a second in silence. Kidding, she adds. I have criteria. And then I do laugh, an expulsion of all the darkness that's been inside me since I was with her last, confusion pouring out of me into this bright moment of clarity. She slips away from me, back into the swirl of chaotic color that we just escaped, and I rest my head in my hands. I know there's a wrongness encapsulating everything, that Alex has done something terrible, maybe more than I know. But buried underneath all the questions and answers I might not want to hear is a very hard kernel of truth. I'm in love with this girl, and that's what I'm holding on to right now, in this moment. I carry that piece with me to the lodge. Nothing penetrates the buoyancy that's filled me since I locked eyes with Alex, said the words that have built up for so long. Brandley separates from me at the door, trailing a finger down the front of my chest and telling me it's time for her to move to phase 3 of getting ready. I nod, well aware that I'm about to disappoint her. She disappears into a bathroom, and I take a beer from the fridge, wind my way through groups of people. There's a decent pool game going. Some of the guys already managed to alienate their dates by paying more attention to the Xbox than them. PK and Park are curled up on the couch together, involved in each other and not their beers. Everyone says hi to me. A couple of girls ask where Brandley is, but I fend them off, eyes roaming the crowd for the one person who matters. I spot her on the deck, back turned to the house. She switched out the dress for a dark green hoodie and jeans, but her hair is still up in a knot. I slip out the back door and she turns with a half smile, hand out to me. Ready? She asks. My phone goes off, and I've got a pic from Brandley. She's sprawled on a bed, wearing a little red nothing, rose petals strewn on the sheets around her. She's seductive, gorgeous, amazing, the wet dream of 99% of the male population. I'm ready. Are you coming? I text back a simple answer. No. Aware it's going to land me in a shitstorm later. Then I turn off my phone. Ready, I say, and I take Alex's hand. I walk away from the lodge, the heat, the people, the light. I walk into the dark with Alex.
Chapter 53. Alex. My spine is vibrating as if it would erupt from my back, singing in the night air. As we find a downed log to sit on, the moon lighting our path. Tell me, he says. Tell me everything. So I talk. After Anna, I was numb. It started in my heart, like a defense mechanism so that I wouldn't feel all the pain. But it pumped through my veins, flowing into my head. I couldn't feel anything, ever. I wasn't even sad. My entire body, my mind, everything was like scar tissue, insensitive, dead, protective. He nods. I've seen his body, know it well. Scar tissue is something he understands. I felt the first thing in a long time when they let Comstock get away with it. I say. Jack's head drops, a groan escaping, trailed by the fog of his breath. You're just a freshman, he says. The only thing stopping us is ourselves, I say, and he covers his face with his hands. I don't know what he's thinking, but it's been said and can't be taken back, like so many other things. So, I tell him. I tell Jack about Comstock's drunkenness and the baseball bat, the metallic ring of metal against skull, and how he slid to the ground like a bag of water. I talk about my strength as I lifted him onto the chair, the hammer and the nails, the sucking sound of his lung trying to reinflate, the flow of everything I needed being provided to me in the moment. The easiness of it all convincing me that everything was as it should be. I tell him, and he listens, his head still in his hands as the frogs begin to sing around us, as they grow accustomed to my voice. I go on. I was a scar, inside and out. Claire came along and started picking at the edges, her fingers finding a way to open me a little. And then you. You tore me apart, and now I'm a fresh wound, open to the air and the infection all around me. Everything gets in and everything hurts. I'm this raw, bleeding thing, feeling everything for the first time. The joy and the pain. When Sarah called Claire that night at the church, his fingers are on my lips. Stop. I thought you should know, I say. I do know. I know, and I'm still here, right next to you. I'm crying, and so is he. The heat from our faces evaporating into the night. I fall into him, and we just hold each other, arms wrapped so tightly, I don't know where he ends and I begin, and it doesn't matter anyway. We pull apart, and he puts his hands on either side of my face, tears sliding away under his thumbs. Can you stop? He asks. I don't know. I've wondered myself, had so many moments when the words were in my mouth, the necessary sounds to both damn and save me, unable to find their way out under the grim stare of my mother. I don't know, I tell him. Can you try? For me? Yes, I say, and his eyes catch all the light of the moon as he smiles. We can do this, he says, hands dropping to mine to squeeze tight. I've got a good scholarship to Hancock. Come with me. You've got the grades, pay the late application fee, and just fucking leave. We'll go together, get you some help. His hands leave mine to spin in the air, helping to weave this tale of hope and the future. Something that might actually happen now that this weight is not on my heart, every beat a struggle. Yes, I say. Maybe we can get an apartment, live off campus. He goes on, now that I've confirmed this daydream could become a reality. I don't have a lot of money, but I'll get a job, do whatever it takes. We'll get a dog, I say. An Irish wolfhound, he says emphatically. And I'm laughing. Laughing at his optimism, his absolute conviction that everything is going to be okay. But maybe he's right. Maybe it will be.
Chapter 54. PK. Branley's shit is so lost it wouldn't matter if it was microchipped. I nearly jump out of my skin when she busts out of an upstairs bedroom, the door hitting the wall so loudly it stops the party dead. She's nearly naked and fisting a wine bottle that looks to be empty, all her eye makeup now streaking down her face in a multicolored river of tears. "Where the fuck is Jack?" she screams, and Park and I immediately shrink into each other a little bit. Everyone is staring for different reasons. The girls, because witnessing the top of the pyramid take a tumble is a spectator sport. And the guys, because Branley is on a balcony and not wearing any underwear. "Where?" she screams again, raising the wine bottle as if she's about to throw it on the head of anyone who withholds information. "Branley, honey," Lila says cautiously, climbing the steps toward what can only be her utter annihilation. "Don't you honey me," Branley yells, scanning the downstairs for a target. Her eyes catch mine, and I will her to be drunk enough not to recognize me. "Is Alex here?" she demands. "Did she fucking come here?" My tongue feels like it's glued to the roof of my mouth, but I don't need to answer because Branley is already coming down, bare feet slipping on the last few steps. Lila catches her, but she jerks her arm away, gaze still locked on mine. Bran, I think maybe...
Park begins. I'm not talking to you, Branly interrupts. I'm talking to PK.
She points at me, her finger a bare inch from my face. It's the nails that get me. I know Branly, like it or not, and she aims for nothing less than perfection. Earlier tonight, those nails were glossy, buffed, manicured, the pearlescent hue accenting the blue of her dress in tiny complimentary ways that only someone who spent a few hours poring over colors would appreciate. And now, those nails are gone. Ragged, bitten to the quick. Even the tender skin alongside the nail beds has been chewed. I don't know how long Branly has been upstairs alone, but she drained a bottle of wine and gnawed at herself before the anger drove her down here. She tried. That's what I'm seeing in the damaged hand sticking in my face, the tracks of ruined eye makeup running down her cheeks. Branly tried to keep her abandonment to herself, tried to not make a scene, tried to retain some dignity. And it's leaking away, right now, right in front of me. The girls are using one hand to cover sly smiles, and the guys aren't even trying to hide the fact that they're taking pics of Branly in her lingerie. Come on, I say, dragging a blanket off the back of the couch and throwing it around her shoulders. A little sigh escapes her, and she sort of collapses forward into me, all her energy gone now that the anger has been spent. I lead her to the bathroom, and she slumps into a corner, tanned legs now riddled with goosebumps. I wet a washcloth and start working on her face, wiping away the layers of makeup that she painstakingly applied before, all of it for Jack. I wash away the remnants of lipstick, now feathered and cracked instead of decorating his body the way she'd planned. I clean her face while she sobs, her shoulders going up and down in a silent dance of bottomless sadness that I'm only too familiar with. Branly's heart is broken, and it's Jack Fisher who's done it to her. I can't help but comfort her, wrapping the blanket around her tightly while she searches for words, telling me things that I'm not meant to hear. There are a couple of hesitant knocks, quiet questions whispered through the door by girls who only want to help, but Branly tells them all to go away. It's me she wants. Me she's pouring herself into. And as Alex's friend, I'm the worst possible choice.
Does he love her?
Branly asks, her fist tight around a tissue.
I don't know, I tell her, glad I can answer honestly. If he said so, she never told me.
But what do you think?
I wish I could say I don't know again, but I saw Jack's face when he spotted Alex tonight at prom. Have watched him try to move through every day that they've been apart as if he wasn't being torn in two.
Yeah, he loves her, I say. And I'm pretty sure she loves him.
I thought Branly would break down again when I said it. But she just nods as if I've confirmed the inevitable and blows her nose.
It's all I've got, you know, she says.
What?
This.
She indicates her drop-dead body with a casual wave.
I'm not smart or funny or mysterious.
You're hot, I tell her. That goes a long way.
Nope.
She says, shaking her head.
What have I got left? 10 years? 15? How long before my tits sag and my hair goes gray and I get wrinkles? How much makeup will I have to wear to compete with the other women who are interesting, so people listen to them? Who got good jobs because they're smart? Who got Jack because they're mysterious? How long before my husband gets bored and bangs a younger version of me because I don't have it anymore?
Branly just asked me a long line of really depressing questions, and I don't have answers for any of them. I think she's selling herself short, because I've glanced at her papers when they come back, and she pulls C's. She might not be Ivy League, but she's not a dumbass. And being nice might go a long way if she, you know, tried practicing it a little bit more. I don't tell her these things because she's drunk as shit and barreling on and probably wouldn't remember anyway.
This is what I am. She says. And I've only got so much time to use it in, so that's what I've done, and it wasn't always the right thing, and maybe it didn't even make me feel good sometimes.
She blows her nose again and wads up the tissue. I hand her a fresh.
I'm sorry about Adam, she says.
I've put him so far behind me that it takes a second for me to put it together. Like maybe he died in the past couple of days and no one told me, and Branley is offering her condolences. I start giggling.
Why is that funny? Branley asks.
I explain, and she actually cracks a smile, the skin around her swollen eyes crinkling with the effort.
You know what I mean, she says.
Yeah, I know. Don't worry about it.
Seriously, I made you feel the way I do right now, she says, tears welling again. And I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
I look at the water leaking from her eyes, the new flush creeping up her cheeks.
Me neither, I say.
And I hold Branley's hand as she cries.
Chapter 55. Jack. The world is new, and I am reborn in it. Sure, spring always feels this way. It's like we forget how to live over the winter. Our lungs do the job of pushing the stale, cooped-up-in-the-house air in and out to keep us alive. We move from building to car to the next building as fast as possible, backs hunched against the wind, faces hid in hoods and hats, eyes on the ground as we go. Joy leaks out of your body in the winter, and whatever isn't sheltered is frozen solid. But it's more than the thaw that's in my system, and I'm not very good at hiding it. Even Park has told me to get that fucking grin off my face more than once. I'm stupid in love, and broadcasting it onto everything I see. The grass is greener, the air warmer, the baseballs a brighter shade of white. The senior countdown is in the single digits, Alex and me neck and neck for the valedictorian spot and loving every second of goading each other. I try to delay her in the halls with a long kiss, telling her that she doesn't need to study, and she responds by biting my lip just enough to let me know it won't be that easy. Get a room, Park yells as he passes, arms slung around PK's neck. I throw a pen at him, but he snatches it out of midair, and I spot Branley ducking into a classroom down the hall, the bright sheen of her hair unmistakable. I can't deny there's a stab in my gut when I see her, a trailing wound left behind that smacks of guilt. I ignore it, focusing instead on Alex's freckles, darker now that she's been coming to my baseball games. See you tonight? I ask. Girls' night, Alex says, shaking her head. You can see PK anytime, I counter. I can see you anytime. I can't argue with that. With Alex officially accepted into Hancock and PK going to the Lutheran school, it'd be selfish to keep her to myself now when I'll see her as much as I want later. Okay, I say. I'll figure out something else. Park's been on my ass about going hunting with him before turkey season is over, even though I know we'll probably just end up drinking in the woods. And I'm cool with that. But my phone vibrates in my pocket before the bell rings at the end of the day. It's a text from Branley, which hasn't happened in weeks. We had it out over the phone the day after prom, her hysterics rising and swelling so much I put her on speaker because I couldn't stand it right next to my ear. But I deserved it, and I knew it, so I let her anger break over me in waves and never argued with anything she said. And she said some pretty terrible things. I was just using her for sex. I could claim the same. I never cared about her at all. I almost wish that were true. I was a player and a liar and a son of a bitch, and I've been those things, all of them. So I let her say them, and hoped this was how I paid my dues. I'm expecting more of the same now, a last volley of hate that she needs to get out of her system before we can move past it. Instead, it's simple. Can we talk? I don't know. Can we? The truth is that I want to. Branley might have fallen in love with me slowly, without my knowing it, but when she fell out, it was a firestorm from hell that eradicated our friendship. Alex is in my blood and fills my mind. I'd like to say that my whole heart is hers as well, but there's a corner of it that belongs to Branley by right. a part filled with firecrackers and crawdads of my childhood. My thumbs move across the keypad. What's up? Want to tell you I'm still going to Hancock. Never was for you. They've got a good RN program. They do have a good RN program, and Branley would make an excellent nurse. But I don't know how much I'm supposed to say right now. Cool. Apparently that wasn't enough, because my phone rings 2 seconds later. I hesitate for a moment before answering, but as usual, Branley gets her way. Hey. Hey, she says back, her voice the version I like, pitched low and normal. It's not the Branley who wants something, high and pouty. It's no big deal about Hancock. I never thought you were going there just because of me anyway, I say.
Other people did,
she says, and I can't argue with that. I open my mouth to tell her that Alex will be at Hancock, just in case she hadn't heard, but she keeps going.
I've got some of your stuff,
she says, which isn't a huge surprise. I've dumped shit in her locker more than once, so I didn't have to walk all the way to mine before lunch. We've carpooled for years. She probably has more of my own stuff than I do. Like what?
I don't know. All kinds of shit, she says. There's like a pile. A couple of shirts, a jump drive, some hats. At least one pair of boxers.
Just the one? I ask before I can help it, a smile twisting my lips.
She giggles. I washed everything.
Thank God, I shoot back, and we're both laughing.
Anyway, I wanted to get it all back to you, Branley says. Can you meet me out at the church in about half an hour?
I'll swing by and pick it up.
That's not a good idea, she says. I said some pretty not nice things about you to Mom and Dad. They're not very happy with you right now.
I sigh. Branley's mom and dad have been my second parents my whole life. Having them not very happy with me makes me feel like shit.
Give it time, she says. It'll blow over.
Yeah, I'll meet you in 30, I say.
Cool.
She's about to hang up when I stop her. Hey, Bran.
Yeah? We good?
Oh, yeah,
she says, and I can hear the smile.
You and me, we're going to be all right.
Chapter 56, PK. A girl's night with Alex is never normal, mostly because she's one girl who hates to be indoors. Even in the dead of winter, she'd drag me into the backyard and start a fire in the pit, our fronts too hot and our backs too cold as we passed a bottle back and forth. More than once, she took me out to the state park, indifferent to my complaining as I trudged behind her on trails so steep, wildlife were the only ones using them. But a girl's night with Alex always brought peace with it, too. And that's something I've been looking for lately. All anybody wants to talk about right now is endings. School is almost out, last day of senior year, a phase of our lives is almost over, an era is drawing to a close. I'm really sick of well-meaning advice from people who like to remind me that they were teens not that long ago. Everybody else sees a finish line ahead, and I'm stuck on beginnings. My heart tells me that I like Park a little more than we agreed upon when we started seeing each other. And as I glance at Alex as she drives, I feel an even deeper sting. It's hard to believe we've been friends for only a year. This girl knows everything about me, has seen me at my best and worst. We're at the point in our friendship where we can be quiet together and it's not awkward, but we can also both sing in the car very loudly and not be embarrassed because we both sound like shit. It's like that. And I'm suddenly very aware that it's as temporary as Park and me. She's headed halfway across the state to Hancock, and I'm going halfway the other direction to the Lutheran school. Sure, we can text and email, make promises to try to get together soon or when we're home on break. Then, when we do go out, it'll just be an update, like a folded letter in a Christmas card. This is what I did since I talked to you last time, now you know. Then we'll do it again the year after that. Each meeting a bullet point conversation to keep each other informed, but never intimate.
I'm afraid of that happening with all my friends, but Alex the most. She's the one most likely to call bullshit on even perfunctory get-togethers, unhappy with the charade of being friends when we aren't actually anymore. I want to find a way to say these things, and have been plowing through a couple of beers to make the whole thing less awkward while she drives out to a beaver dam she wants to show me. Yes, really. She's got her eyes on the road, humming something that I'm pretty sure she's making up as she goes, when I blurt out what's on my mind. I wish I had you longer, I say, then blush up to my ears. Wait, that sounded weird. What I mean is... Never mind, screw it. Alex's eyebrows go together and she breaks, pulling off the road into the shade of a little turnaround in the woods. I get it, she says. My head is humming a little, so I just nod, too aware that I don't have a way with words like she does. Claire, listen to me, Alex says, using the tone that makes dogs sit even when she didn't give the command. So I listen. I didn't have anything for a long time, she says. All I knew was my house and school. There was a path in between the two I never left, like a sleepwalker. You woke me up, Claire. Pushed me off it, and made me see other paths. Other people. Do you realize I wouldn't even be going to college if it wasn't for you? Really? I ask, voice small as I pick at a hangnail. Yes, Alex says. After graduation, I wouldn't have even had that path anymore. No school. Just home. That's no good, I shudder, thinking of Alex stuck at home with her mom, two shadows passing each other without speaking until they both forget how. Definitely not, she says, putting the car back in gear and us on the road again. So don't think that college changes. In the cup holder, her phone goes off as a text message comes in. Want me to get it? I ask. Sure. What the fuck? It's from Branly. Alex shrugs. What's it say? Just that she wants to talk to you and can you meet her at the church in half an hour? Alex doesn't say anything, but takes a left at the next crossroads, which makes my head sing with alarm bells on top of the beer buzz. We're not seriously going. Why not? Because she's like your archenemy or something? She's not. Alex, seriously, Branly's not a bad person. If she wants to talk to me so she can get some closure, I'm not going to deny her that. I'm about to say that closure is overrated, but she's already switched back to the conversation before we were interrupted by Branly's text. College won't change anything between us, Claire, she says. The kind of friendship we have doesn't just stop. I don't want to argue about going to see Branly, so I crack another beer as we head toward the church, the shadows of the woods around us lengthening in the dying light.
Chapter 57. Jack. I'm the world's biggest idiot. An idiot for thinking Branly would let me go so easily, for not reading more into her parting shot over the phone, for not questioning why she wanted to meet out at the church and not at her parents' house. I'm an idiot for not taking everything I know about Branly and realizing the equation didn't add up. Branly, who doesn't give in. Branly, who always gets what she wants. Branly, who is sprawled across the altar when I walk in, push-up bra obvious under her cheerleading uniform, lacy panties flashing in my face. The worst part is, I'm an idiot with a dick, and that part of me is dead curious about what she's got planned. Jack, she says, trailing circles with one finger in the dust on the altar. I'm glad you came. What the fuck are you doing, Branly? I say, trying to keep my voice even. When she sent me a pic after prom, all I had to do was turn off my phone so I didn't have to see. Now she's right in front of me and I can't look away. How many times, Jack, you and me, right here on this altar? She pitches her voice low and sexy, and I tell myself I'm walking toward her so I can hear, and that's the only reason why. How many times? She asks again. A lot. The answer is a lot. Her hair hanging down the side, brushing in the dirt. Our noises echoing back at us from the stone walls. I clear my throat. Where's my stuff? I say. Her eyes go big and wide, fake surprised. One finger goes to her lipsticked mouth in mock confusion. Shoot, I forgot it at my house. God damn it, Branly, I say under my breath. But she's smiling at me, the perfect mix of the girl I know so well, and one every straight guy in the world wants to fuck. Get down, I tell her. She shakes her head. Come up here with me. You know I can't. Bullshit, Jack, she says, temper poking through the bedroom act. You've been mine for years. She can't just take you away, and you can't act like I was nothing. You weren't nothing, I say immediately, even though I hate myself for it, especially because it's true. Her face softens. Then come here, she says, one more time. And I'm considering it. What would it really hurt to say goodbye to Branly in the way she likes best? Alex would never know, and goddammit, I want to. Those are the only reasons why I should, against a million better reasons why I shouldn't. But the wants are louder and more immediate, filling my head as she leans into me, perfumed hair against my cheek. Jack, she says into my ear, and my whole body is humming. I think I hear a car outside and I pull away, but her hand is on the front of my pants and I don't move far. What was that? I ask.
Nothing,
she says, hand against me. She's going in for a kiss, but the half-second of space between us cleared my head, disrupting everything I want to do and reminding me of what I should. Bran, I say, and put my hands on her shoulders. This isn't happening.
Damn it, Jack, she hisses. All I want you to do is fuck me.
If you won't, I sure as hell will, comes a deep voice from the front of the church. I spin around, broken glass sliding under my feet, arms out in front of Branly like somehow I can keep the two guys who just walked in from seeing her. They're hunters, locked and loaded for turkey season, shotguns in hand and a wave of whiskey breath preceding them that tells me bagging a bird wasn't their only goal.
What you two doing?
The guy out front asks, a twisted smile that says he already knows. He gets closer, and I see why the smile goes past a leer and into something worse. It's because he's missing some of his nose. We recognize each other at the same moment, and Ray Parsons turns back to his buddy, the one Alex never touched because she didn't have to.
Well, look who the fuck it is, Billy.
We're just leaving, I say, as I feel Branly's knees poking into my back, her fingers tight on my shoulders. She's breathing fast and shallow, little puckers of air hitting my neck.
Fuck you are, Ray says. We've been looking forward to running into you for a long time. Where's your girlfriend, huh? Got a new one? This one ain't so scary, is she, Billy?
Billy's bloodshot eyes skip right over my shoulder to latch onto Branly.
She ain't scary at all, he says. Bet you could bend her over in 2 seconds, Ray.
Get out of here, Branly says, her voice shaky. Leave us alone.
We're not gonna hurt you, Ray says, ignoring me and talking to Branly.
He leans his shotgun against the wall next to the door. Billy does the same.
See?
He spreads both hands in front of him, but he's still coming toward us, his smile too wide and empty, and Branly knows it.
I said get the fuck out of here, she yells.
Listen to the mouth on her, Ray, Billy says, following his friend.
Branly's curled into a ball behind me, and I've still got my arms out, but I don't know what to do with them. If these guys have got more than fucking with us on their minds, we're screwed, and I know it.
We don't want any trouble, I say.
Neither do we, Ray says,
and now his chest is inches from mine, the stink of his breath in my face.
"But some pussy'll do," he says to Branley.
"Back the fuck off." I shove him, but he barely moves.
It doesn't even knock the smile off his face as he reaches around me to grab at Branley's leg. She yells and kicks, her bare foot striking out to hit him square in the face and splitting his lip open. I take a swing, but his friend is on me, and the punch hits him in the shoulder instead. Not hard enough to do anything other than throw us both off balance as we land on the ground and roll in the dirt, hands grabbing for a hold. I hear Branley screaming, but all I can do is struggle. Billy is stronger than he looks. I get my feet under me, but he's on his too and gets my arms pinned behind my back. I buck and kick, swearing a blue streak as I see Ray drag Branley toward him across the altar, her skirt pulling up to show a tiny red thong that covers absolutely nothing. He smacks her bare ass, leaving a welt.
"You came up here looking for something, girl," he says, "and you're getting it."
I'm fighting and twisting anything I could do to get free, but Billy's got a grip I can't break.
Ray gets his mind set on something. Not much you can do to stop him,
Billy says, his tone weirdly conversational.
He's had a bit to drink to. Let him have his fun and nobody'll get hurt. It won't take 5 minutes.
5 minutes. Like the fucking problem is that we're on a schedule and not that Branley is about to be raped right in front of me. She's kicking and screaming, but he's already got her panties off and is going for his belt when I hear the sound of a shotgun being pumped. There's a moment when I lock eyes with Alex, calm and collected, gun in her hands. I've got the space of a breath to tell her not to, and I don't.
Chapter 58. Alex. This is how I kill someone. The cold steel of a gun, unfamiliar in my hand, but easy to decipher. When I pull the trigger, he is blown clear off the altar, a spray of blood arcing across Branley's screaming face as he goes. There's another yell, this one low and guttural. I hear someone coming for me, but I don't know how to reload the gun, and I always knew it would end this way, regardless. Violence begets violence. And if I want to be a cog in that wheel, I have to accept when it stops on me. His shoulder hits me right in the sternum, and I'm flying, my back arched as I sail over a pew, the first of the stars popping in the night sky, trailing across my vision as I land so hard some teeth are knocked loose, slipping down my throat before I have a chance to spit them out. I hear Jack screaming and Branley crying, and a vacuum of silence where PK's voice should be. As blood flows down my shoulders, so thick it feels like hair, wet and heavy. This is how I die. And I am not surprised.
Chapter 59. Jack. Branley is hysterical, blood running down her face as she slides off the altar and crumples to her knees. She's crawling for her underwear and saying my name over and over, but I go right past her to the other side of the pew. The guy who tackled Alex is leaning against the wall, mouth agape.
"Shit," he says, looking up at me. "Shit, shit, shit."
Alex is half on, half off a pile of rubble, the same one we sat on a few months ago when she gave me her number. There's bone sticking out of her arm, and her shoulders don't look quite right, but it's what's above that rips a sound from my throat as I go down beside her, hand clutching hers. The back of her head is caved in, and blood flows down the rocks, bright red contrasting with the light pink of her brain.
"Alex," I say, hands on her face, fingers on her open mouth. "Alex?" Her eyes flutter, and a ridiculous hope blooms in my chest.
"It's okay," I tell her. "It's okay. You're going to be okay. We're going to fix you." And I want to. Right now, with her mind out in front of me, I want to reach inside and pluck out the darkness, find the parts of her that aren't supposed to be there, and let the medics sort out the rest. Her fingers tighten on mine, but barely, and I know I'm bullshitting myself. "Alex," I say her name loudly, needing to say at least one thing. "I wasn't with her. I wasn't with Branley. I wouldn't do that to you."
I'm yelling in her face, and the ghost of a smile spreads on her lips.
I know,
she says, her words barely closing the distance between us, even though I'm right on top of her.
You're a good person.
And then she's gone. The inches between us nothing, as she slips away, and I'm only holding what's left behind.
Chapter 60, PK. My life is a list of things I didn't do. I didn't send $5 to a girl in Africa. I didn't call the cops after Ray Parsons tried to rape me, so he tried again on someone else. I didn't tell Branley she's more than tits and ass and legs, so she still believed it. I didn't stop Alex from coming to the church, even though I knew it was a bad idea. So now I'm standing here, empty hands at my side, looking at the blood spattered on the wall. Red, trailing fingers point accusingly downward at a body hidden behind the altar. Branley is on her butt in the dirt, rocking back and forth and crying, her underwear in a ball in her hands, tears running down her face. A guy is against the wall, saying shit, shit, shit over and over again like it's the only word he knows. I can see the top of Jack's head over the pew, but Alex isn't getting up, and I don't want to know why. My head is still ringing from the shotgun blast as I make my way over to Branley, but I'm barely lifting my feet and I trip over a beer bottle, the sound of it rolling away, empty and hollow. Branley looks up at me but doesn't stop rocking. I sit down next to her, peeling the thong from her hands.
I'm sorry,
she says, words barely seeping out between tears.
I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
You should put on your underwear, I tell her. I don't know what else to say, and it seems to be the most sensible thing at the moment. The guy in the corner is still saying shit, shit, shit. Between him and Branley's I'm sorry's filling the air, I can't make my own words. Jack isn't saying anything either, just leaning over an unmoving Alex, holding her hand against his face. It's limp and loose in his hold, and I try not to look at her blood pooling around our shoes as I crouch next to him. There are no questions, but I want to ask them anyway. I want to say, is she dead? Is she gone? Is she going to be okay? So that Jack can tell me no, no, and yes. But the words won't come because I know speaking them is useless. Even as I reach out and press my warm skin against hers, now cooling. The litany of shit, shit, shit has stopped, and the guy against the wall looks at me.
Hey, I know you, he says.
And I think my own mother could be in front of me right now and I wouldn't recognize her. I don't think so, I say. But he's saying shit, shit, shit again. Tonight, I have been too stupid, too slow, too still. I have not done things I should have. My hand goes for my phone, but my fingers are too shaky to dial.
What are you doing? He asks.
Calling the cops, I say. Like I should have fucking done months ago when I was right in this very place, but I didn't. And now Alex killed someone and I don't know what happened to Branley and there's blood pooling on the floor and fuck! I just figured out where that guy knows me from. Now all I can say is fuck, fuck, fuck. And he takes it from me, making the call himself. I slump next to him, rock cold against my back.
Here.
He hands me a stick of gum.
You don't want to smell like beer when the cops come.
I take it, balling up the wad of paper and throwing it on the floor with the rest of the trash.
I wouldn't have done it, he says. To you, that night, or to that girl now, you gotta know that.
And I don't know if it's guilt or fear or shock making his voice quiver. Or maybe it's the actual truth and he wants so badly to believe it himself he's got to tell me of all people. But I don't want his words, because I can't forgive him right now.
not when the spreading pool of Alex's blood has almost reached me.
"It's just Ray, man," he says. "He's like a bulldozer. You're along for the ride or you're crushed underneath."
And I think, yeah, he would have raped me, and Branley too. Because who wants to be crushed when you can do the crushing? But when he gives me my phone back, his hands are shaking worse than mine, and we can hardly make the exchange. So I don't say it. I don't tell him that he's an asshole who would rather rape girls than stand up to his friend, because I couldn't even make a fucking phone call to report my own assault because I was worried my friends who were drinking would be pissed at me, so what the fuck do I know? "What do we tell them?" I ask. "What do we tell the cops when they get here?"
"The truth," he says. "Ain't no way around it. We tell him the truth."
The truth is that I saw my best friend kill someone with no hesitation. The truth is that I stood still and did nothing, while the life was knocked out of her. The truth is that Alex had just told me we have the kind of friendship that doesn't end. The truth is she had no way of knowing she was wrong.
Chapter 61, Jack. I tell the truth, all of it. Officer Nolan comes to my hospital room and writes until his pen is out of ink, holds up a finger to let me know he'll be right back, and returns with one from the nurse's desk, an advertisement for an antidepressant stamped across it. He hasn't said a word, and I have no idea if he believes me or not, but when he asked me what happened, I wanted to answer, and not just about tonight. Because maybe if I talk about Alex, the Alex from before I even knew her, she won't be able to leave me yet. I'm keeping her alive with words, telling what happened years ago right up until now. The town will explode, I know. Alex's name will be everywhere, yearbooks cracked open so people can point and say they knew her. Her name and mine will be linked together forever, our names and faces the first thing that comes to mind when the other is mentioned. And that's exactly what I want. I'm dead calm as I talk, piling the words on top of one another so I don't have to hear my parents' voices in the hall, demanding to see me. I told Nolan to keep the door closed so I could tell the factual version, the one that has dates and times, conversations and locations. I'll tell Mom and Dad the story from my heart, the one with Branley and blood, the smell of smoke in the night, and tears sliding over freckles. The nurse told me I'm in shock, and that's why I don't feel anything yet. I'm okay with that, because I know when it hits, it's going to be a freight train that flattens me, knocking the wind out and leaving me on my knees, mouth open in a perpetual inhale before the racking sob breaks out. Branley is already there. She's having a complete breakdown in the next room. I can hear her through the wall, the rise and fall of her voice as familiar as my own but breaking with emotion, whipping everyone along in a tide that floods through the whole hallway. She started screaming when they separated us, feet kicking, swear words flying. It took two orderlies to get her under control, but they must have lost their grip at some point, because now I can hear them yelling at her to get down off the bed and stop swinging the IV tray. "Your friend isn't cooperating," Nolan says, putting the final period on my statement and slapping his notebook shut. "Don't expect that to start anytime soon," I say. "Okay for your parents to come in?" I nod, and they're through the door in a second, a nurse on their heels. My mom's a mess of tears, her face a mask folding under the mixed pressures of anger and grief. Alex's name, a word her lips can't form yet. She just says, "Your girlfriend," with a question mark at the end of it, and I shake my head no. Dad's more like me, a brick wall that I know I'll have to run smack into as soon as I get home, all the questions and repercussions stopping me short the second I walk in the door. "We want to keep him overnight because of the shock," the nurse tells my parents. They try to argue that I'm better off at home, but the truth is I'd rather stay here, and not just because I'm not ready to tell them everything. The sooner I'm home in my bed, staring at the crack in my ceiling, the closer I'll be to returning to everyday life. The sooner I'll have to stare at the Hancock pennant my mom hung over my bed and admit that the fantasy Alex and I spun together about apartments and part-time jobs and Irish wolfhounds was exactly that. A fantasy. One that evaporated right in front of me in a spray of blood. I know that the seconds are ticking by, making minutes turning into hours, becoming days that will stretch into weeks and years. And with every sunset, Alex will be a little farther from me, her face a bit fuzzier, her voice an echo, our time a memory. And I'm not letting go just yet. Right now, life is on pause, and I want it that way, because she can't slip away from me entirely until I start moving on. Branley comes to me in the night, smelling like hospital soap and tears. I heard her shower running through the wall, and her skin is still hot from it. Some of the red fades as she lies next to me, her body cooling. But there are spots where she scrubbed herself raw, and they stay bright, peeking from under the sleeves of her hospital robe, the hem that stops right above her knees. "I'm sorry," she says again, her throat raw. I wrap my arms around her, and she settles into me, her nose fitting in the spot between my collarbones, my chin resting on her head. We've been like this so often, as friends and as more, that it's second nature. Our breathing finds a rhythm together, and I feel her soft movements beneath the blanket. I put my hand on hers to still it, where she's rubbing her upper arm. Her breath hisses out in pain as my fingers pass over three bumps just under the skin, embedded shot. "I wouldn't let them take them out," she says, her lips moving against my chest. I nod my understanding as her hand goes back to them, rubbing up and down in a hypnotic movement that draws us both down into exhaustion. And while she came to me out of habit, I know there's more comfort for her in those wounds than I can ever give.
Chapter 62, PK. I'm somewhere I should never have to be. Alex's grave has already settled, the dirt sinking a little lower with each rain. The grass all around her stone is trampled and muddy, pockmarked from the high heels and camera tripods. But the news crews aren't the only ones coming. I've been here every day in the week since her burial, clearing away the debris. There are the expected flowers, which I've been taking home and putting in vases, until Mom said our house smelled like a funeral home, then clapped her hand over her mouth like she wished she could force the words back in. The plastic flowers I took to Goodwill until the girl at the donation center told me they didn't want any more. Now I just throw them in the dumpster. There are other things I don't know what to do with. Notes with names and dates. Pages of diaries ripped out and weighed down with stones. Some of them have been folded tightly, some wide open, edges flapping in the wind. They're for Alex, not me. I read only a few at first. The open ones that were begging for someone to finally know. I wanted to stop because I couldn't stand the hot weight of all their knowledge in my stomach. Still, I read them. I read them until I understood Alex and what she did. Her tombstone has become a shrine, the pilgrims coming under the cover of darkness to unburden their secrets. The notes I clear away, sending their accusations to the sky with flames and smoke, while I sit at the fire pit, across from the empty chair where Alex should be. Some things take longer to burn. A broken necklace, a frayed bra clasp, a pair of underwear with "I was 14" written on them in permanent marker. My father presided over her funeral, not meeting my eyes when he quoted Romans 12:19. "Do not take revenge, my friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord." But he looked right at me when he hit on Micah 7:19. "And all our sins are cast into the depths of the sea." I don't know if he meant Alex's sins or everyone else's. Or maybe my own.
I hadn't talked to Jack about what he told the cops until we crossed paths at her grave one evening. Me hauling away an armload of wilted flowers, him carrying a fresh batch. When he tried to talk to me about it, I punched him in the chest, and he let me. Crushing petals against him and driving thorns into his skin.
You really didn't know?
He asked, eyes peeping.